Hello, I'm Dan Masterson, host of Strategy Talk, where we take a unique view of world events. We report news as history. With me today is the editor of StrategyPage.com and well-known military author, Jim Dunnigan. Associate editor and syndicated columnist, Austin Bay, also joins us.
Welcome, Austin. We're missing our friend and colleague, Jim Dunnigan, this week because of Sandy. He lives in Lower Manhattan. Actually, he lives in Chelsea, right, Austin?
That's right. And now let's just specify Sandy in case anyone listening around the world doesn't know Sandy, that we're very familiar with Sandy here in America, Hurricane Sandy, which paid
right.
New Jersey and New York a visit.
Right. And Jim's bouncing around trying to get his daily job done, and he just is unable to be with us. Phone communication is intermittent. They're having problems with internet connections down there, and then all the flooding in the subways. So he's having an adventure.
Well, power is still off in large portions of Lower Manhattan, including where Jim lives, and fortunately, one of the work sites he's got power. So.
Right. So that's where he goes to do some work and contact us. And then the rest of the time he's out of contact with us, basically. But anyway, you wrote an article this week on Benghazi. It's generated some interest. As I see it, there are three issues with the attack in Benghazi. First is what happened before the attack, the security issues. Two, what happened during the attack. And then three, what has happened after the attack. So let's address those in that order. There's some issues that are now coming up. There was testimony up on Capitol Hill a couple of weeks ago. There's a new cable that has come to light on the internet, both at the Washington Post, Fox News, and the Heritage organization have been covering this, that says that it looks like security was lax and that there were some real issues with security there in Benghazi, and there was intelligence telling us that there were these militant Islamist groups forming in that part of Libya. Well, you want to address that a little bit?
Let's talk, Dan, even before the date of this cable and the cable, at least according to one of the Washington Post blogs, was dated August 16th, so it's, as in, coded up, it's 3.5-4 weeks before September 11th. But let's take the context, Dan, and let's take a look, and I based a column that I wrote on September 18th. I actually wrote it on Sunday, September 16th. September 18th was the week, obviously a week after September 11th, but it looked at really the deep context of the Benghazi attack. And I even connected it to 1968. Why 1968? Well, that was an election year, and America was involved in a war, the Vietnam War, and there was a Tet Offensive. And the Tet Offensive was clearly structured by General Giap, the North Vietnamese general that put the offensive together, as a strategic attack on the American election. To affect public opinion in America, and affecting public opinion exert political effects. It's known that if you're at war with the United States, a vulnerable time appears during the presidential election. You're changing the government. In the mind of a dictator, you're toppling the government. And look, 1864, you could even start the context of Benghazi in 1864, with the absolute concern of Copperhead Democrats in the North who really didn't want the Union Army in the field voting because they were believed with good reason that the Union Army would overwhelmingly vote for Abraham Lincoln. And it was a struggle to get the vote to the military in the field in the fall of 1864, in part because of crass partisan political concerns. Let's drop forward to 2012. It's an election year. We're in a war. Now, one of the things in this week's column I point out is that the Obama administration did not like the name Global War on Terror and opted for Overseas Contingency Operation, OCO, as it was called. global war on terror didn't set the tone that Obama believed, the diplomatic tone that he wanted his administration to express. Still, there's a war going on. It's an election year. The militant Islamist terrorists, whether they're Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda-inspired, and I would say America's enemies in general, they don't care what George W. Bush called the war on terror or what Barack Obama calls the war on terror. They've got a war on the United States. They've got a war on America. And they're going to pursue it. So first of all, as a security warning, and this is what you would call a deep intelligence indicator because you've got a historical record, 2012 is a time of heightened security. Looking at places, trying to identify vulnerable places that would have where a tactical attack, a bomb explosion, could exert strategic political effects. Now, secondly, another deep point, whether it's historical, is an intel indicator, it's just common sense. What is 9/11, Dan? 9/11 is an iconic date. It's an iconic date for the United States. It's an iconic date for Al-Qaeda. There's another date. There's a specific 24-hour period, or it's longer than that because the Earth rotates, of course, but the thing is that there's a day on the calendar that you know has political resonance for an American enemy. And it's one where you would cue your security personnel and your intelligence personnel and say, all right, we know we're vulnerable all the time. We know we have run risks all the time. But it's 2012, presidential election, and that's 9/11. So, Dan, this is well before Benghazi. Now, another deep indicator on this before we get to that August 16th table. Before we get, it's one of the common senses, is Arab Spring. Arab Spring is, as I've said on Strategy Talk before, we're not really going to know its outcome for another 20 or 30 years, maybe 40 years, because you're dealing with such deep, embedded cultural, social, and historical issues. It's a lot of upside. And is there a lot of downside? Yes, we've talked about it numerous times. Jim and I have with you on Strategy Talk. So there's a region, and it's a region that has look, Al-Qaeda, this is Al-Qaeda's home turf. Well, parts of it. Egypt, though, each of the radical elements of the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood are what spawned the parts of the most militant elements of Al-Qaeda. Ayman al-Zawahiri is an Egyptian. Now the current commander of Al-Qaeda. So you've got locale, you've got the year, you got the date. Now let's move to August 16th. And again, this is part of the problem of Benghazi, which has been the reluctance of responsible leaders in our government to address legitimate questions about Benghazi. And now this August 16th cable has emerged, and according to the link on the Washington Post blog that I'm looking at right now, it's referring to a Fox News report, all right? And it's Jennifer Rubin's blog, so someone out there can say, well, there's a conservative commentator, but she's taken it upon herself to put it out and discuss it. The cable summarizes an emergency meeting convened by the U.S. mission in Benghazi on August 15th. And it says that a known, an RSO, and that's Regional Security Officer in State Department talk, since its strategy page and where military intelligence and history, I'll just mention an RSO is a senior agent and what's called the Diplomatic Security Service of a State Department, and that their job is embassy security assessment and also law enforcement, and then at times protection of embassy personnel, staff, consular personnel, and staff. So the assessment of the regional security officer, according to Cable, was that the consulate could not be protected. Now, again, looking at the report, the Cable went where it should go. Office of the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton. Also, an emergency action committee at State. And it goes on to say that the discussion touched on militant Islamist militias, named some, and the like. Now, some of the commentary that has really appeared on the internet in the last 3 or 4 hours, Dan, and you wonder why this wasn't vetted. I do. Oh, you give it some time, a couple of weeks, but around the 1st of October, a month ago. Oh, and here it is now. And we're recording this on November the 1st, not October 1st. But some of the commentary is like, here's a clear, sober, professional warning of statement of the threat to this particular consulate. It's one that, just looking at it from my own, based on my own experience and security issues, you read it and you think, well, of course, these people know their business. The security people know their business. This is the kind of rigorous assessment that should go on. It does not read like someone attempting to build up political cover. And part of that is political cover. They're mentioning the militias. And we already know, we do know this, a part of the envelope, the larger Arab Spring envelope in Libya's case, is Libya really doesn't have an army. It has got some what have proved to be more reliable militias led and manned by people who are committed to Libya as a parliamentary democracy. And you have some in some of these individuals that are, when you describe them, they have a very favorable view of the United States, pro-America. But it's anarchic, Dan, and we know this. So put that knowledge, that general knowledge about the situation in Libya, and the complexity of the political complexity in Benghazi in particular, and this Cable is common sense. Why are we only learning about it now? All right, that's a legitimate question. And I said here, I've just popped up something else, and this is on the in his blog on the Heritage site. Again, it's conservative, but this is one of the issues. Who's covering this? It's fair to ask, is this a major news item? Why, of course it is. Pointed out a moment ago the reluctance of the administration in discussing the issue. Well, there's a reluctance in what is regarded as the mainstream media to discuss Benghazi. So you're going to have to go with people who are working the story because it is news. And I've just gone to Carafano's blog, and he comments on the Cable. He says, why was the Cable kept secret for so long? And I said that just a moment ago in my own reaction when I learned about it. And this is a key point, though. Why would anyone rule out a terrorist attack on the consulate, rule it out, or not address it explicitly as a possibility, anyone with knowledge of this Cable and of the assessment by the RSO, Regional Security Officer? And then I'll pick on Carafano to another point that he's got. This is, speaking of his perspective, he was wondering why there weren't interim findings on Benghazi available now. What he means by that is that there's a paper trail, a cable trail, an email trail, and the cable was classified secret. But goodness gracious, after the attack, we know it's occurred. And a legitimate question is to ask, was there a security assessment? There were people who asked that. After the attack, there was. And this one that described an enemy acting on the vulnerabilities that the cable discussed. Now you get into other indicators, Dan. You asked beforehand. And one of the things that came out within, I'll provide a timeline on this, and I'm doing this somewhat on my own memory, but I'm going to say by Friday, September 14th, and that happens to be the date, though, that Libya's interim president issued a statement about Benghazi. But there were articles popping up, small, short reports, and yes, some of them serviced on the wire services being reported, that at least one, if not two, pro-government militia commanders in Benghazi had stated that they had gone to Americans in Benghazi, government representatives, who knows for sure where they went. I mean, there was a CIA safe house operation. There were a couple of other things going on, as well as the as well as the consulate. And said, this, by name, the radical militia, Ansar al-Sharia, intends to make trouble on 9/11. That was reflected in the Libyan president's, interim president's, statement. I think I probably read that, on the 15th or 16th, but then it collated with those reports that there had been at least rumors passed on, in the days just prior to 9/11. In a couple of the, reports, you go back, they'll say that this information arrived September 8th, or a fellow said something on September the 10th. Local warnings. But these local warnings now, in the context of what happened before, you've got the cable, you've got the deep context that I outlined, goodness gracious, now you're getting short-term tactical intelligence and intelligence warning. And it's set for 9/11. That tactical intelligence is now aligning with common sense, the historical information, and what we'll call a strategic intelligence assessment. And that is a legitimate reading at this point, as these pieces have fallen into place as this evidence comes out. So now you start asking other questions, and I'm looking at Jim Carafano's blog, but he's summing up other things. You can look at other comments over the last, now Dan, the last seven and a half weeks since 9/11. Why wasn't there some form of either, first of all, security beef up, security reinforcement for the consulate, or to put it in military terms, a quick reaction force, or rapid reaction force, or rapid response force, as the variety of terms, to respond to an attack on this particular consulate, since you had an array of indicators and assessments and now information that this consulate was a target of an attack by a radical militia, terror attack, an attack on what is, for diplomatic purposes, U.S. territory. Fair question to ask. Logical question. Again, this is another one of in some ways, SOP, standard operating procedure. Why isn't it there? Or why wasn't everyone, another question is, why didn't you just extract everyone? Why wasn't it done? Fair question. Not a political question. Maybe politically charged, because in the middle of an election. But that is a step away from several steps, actually, from recognize that it still does not dispute that it's a legitimate question and a fair question, given what occurred. Now, let's move to what happened. When I wrote that column of September 18th, and I commend it again to Strategy Talk listeners, go back and read it, I based my doubt of the administration's video did it narrative. And Dan, the name of the Cranks video was what? Innocence of Muslims? Is that the name of it? I'm doing that off the top of my head. I think that's the name of it. But
I think it was Innocence of Muhammad.
Well, here's the deal. No, I haven't looked at it. I am sure this is one place that I am sure President Obama and I completely agree. I'm sure it's sacrilegious, insulting, and amateurish. And vile. It had already gone up on the web in late spring or early summer, at least this trailer. It had been there. And to hear something else in general, to blame demonstrations against the United States that occur on 9/11 on a video actually infantilizes individual Muslims who really are outraged. It does. It says, oh, you're so passionate. That's what ticked you off. And let's assume that there are many that are outraged by it. Just as an example, there are still a lot of American Christians, Catholics in particular, that are angry about Piss Christ, the urine-drenched cross that was a crucifix that received National Art and Endowment Humanities money. It's a classic conundrum about federal funding of art and on. So, an assault on someone's essential elements of someone's faith, legitimate anger. But it's infantilizing to say, that's why you throw a stone. That's why you assault someone else's embassy. That's why you pick up a rifle and kill someone. It is. And yet it's something that we constantly see as an excuse to excuse violent behavior. And it also ignores the long tradition of radical groups and dictatorships looking for, quote-unquote, tactical inciters of passion to carry out, for them, politically useful demonstrations and physical intimidation or violent intimidation. And that's the other thing. There's a deeper lesson with that. But anyway, why I doubted the video narrative is when some of the other reports coming out during the first 4 or 5 days afterwards, there was a force of anywhere from 100 to 400 militiamen who launched this attack. The attack occurred, and this was in early reports, in two echelons, and they were supported by heavy infantry weapons. Mortars, for sure. There were reports of that, and by the time I wrote that column on Sunday, September 16th, again, it's dated the 18th, they said, there's evidence that they were firing mortars at the consulate. Implication, too, that there may have been heavy machine guns. Now, I based my doubt on common sense and an experience shared by many strategy page readers. That's called basic training. Anybody who's been through basic training knows how hard it is to move 100 men, a company, infantry company, even a militia company, might even be harder because you're dealing with individuals with vastly different levels of training. Moving them even under peacetime circumstances, much less in a tactical movement from an assembly area to an assault area. I'll start using some of the military terms. Move their heavy weapons. Make sure that they're fed, supplied, briefed. Why? Goodness gracious. You're looking at something that has taken time to do. And to pick the target, and ascertain what where to go over the target to figure out you're going to hit in two waves. that requires senior commanders to do what commanders do when they're preparing for an attack, and that takes time. So we're looking at something that even in the chaos of Benghazi was planned. That's what I said, it's planned. This is not spontaneous. This is not a response to a ludicrous, sacrilegious video. This is a terror attack. This is an attack on a U.S. consulate, U.S. embassy, and it killed a U.S. ambassador in the process. This was all coming out within 5 or 6 days. Not really from the administration. No. A lot of it was coming from Benghazi. The curious thing is, and CNN got in some, I think, deserved ethical, an ethically troubling situation when they acquired a diary that had been picked up in the consulate, and the diary happened to be Ambassador Stevens' diary. And he had in there that he was very concerned about the security situation in the area, in Libya and in the area. Well, okay, that was one of the first places that we learned about Stevens' concerns, but now this cable certainly reinforces it, and there were other statements that have come out since. Some of it, Dan, we're looking at the process of the Washington bureaucracy, the Washington bureaucracy covering itself, because it certainly looks in the aftermath like the administration is looking for a place for blame for the mistakes. I know this is getting into your third part of your question, for the mistakes, and we've listed some of them. One of the biggest mistakes, of course, has been the reluctance to discuss it. The difficulty for the leadership to discuss it, and also the initial video did it narrative. Some of the leakage is coming out of, well, and this isn't exactly leakage, after it was, well, the intel agencies didn't tell us that it was a problem, and that was stated in the aftermath by various elements of the administration. CIA said we never, once it came out that there was allegations of a request for aid as the attack was being, as the attack was occurring, CIA official spokesman said CIA never denied aid. Very carefully crafted response. But it's saying, don't lay that on us. And to some degree, you've heard Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta said, well, we decided not to respond, and this more or less verified that there was a request for aid, because the military doesn't send in troops or a response or like this when we don't really know what's going on. Well, I'm going to tell you what, that's not true. Soldiers are often tasked, given this order, and I'm going to give you an example. Here, give you an example of it. We don't know what's going on. We know it's violent. We know it's bad. We know American lives are on the line. You're going in. You're going to have to figure it out, and we'll support you.
Well,
that order is given. It wasn't in this case. It wasn't given. At least based on what Secretary of Defense said, you know. But he said we don't do that. Well, I'll dispute that. We do it. Don't always do it. In many cases, the Secretary of Defense is correct. You want as much information as you possibly can.
Austin?
Yes.
Well, one of the things that has bugged me about that whole thing is, you know, you and I can, and a lot of our listeners, I'm sure, can remember 1979 and what was happening then. Ever since then, the military has really put an emphasis on their special operations, being able to go in and do stuff immediately. And this whole thing of not knowing, there were plans in place for scenarios exactly like this. And these special op guys practice that over and over and over and over again.
I'm not going to actually I will move on to where I was going next on this. You're right, and you're referring to Desert One, the failure of Desert One, the Delta Force raid to try to free the hostages, and the special ops community says never again with that. We do exercise it. You're reinforcing my point, though, is really what you are. But I just was going to directly take on the chaotic circumstances that Secretary of Defense Panetta was insinuating in his statement. And I'm going to be fair to him. There could be times like that. But then again, now we're looking at this increasing drip, drip, drip of information, which is my current column, and looking at the corrosive effects, and the corrosive effects on his statement about the drip, drip, drip of information, which is you did know something about it. You've been warned about it. You even had names, and you've got statements by responsible officials in the State Department talking about the threat to Benghazi, and you have evidence that the ambassador himself was concerned about it. Now, we get to the chaos, Dan. Here is what happened. One of the things I didn't know on September 16th that I do now is that, and this isn't disputed by the administration, that the battle lasted at least 7 hours. There's one report that it was 8 hours. And what happened is that two of the individuals that were engaged in this were former SEALs. We know about this now. They were there as security, involved in security in some CIA mission, safe house. And on whatever murky, obscure circumstances, they went back over there to the consulate with weapons. And now you have, as I said in the column this week, two American fighters, warriors, heroes, soldiers, sailors. They're two SEALs. My goodness, they've got a skill set, an incomparable military skill set, and you know they've got will. Now, it explains how this battle could go on between a militia, which now the numbers on it are 200, 200, 250. In other words, kind of a split between 100 and 400. But, you know, company plus, in military terms, that was supported by the latest information. When they call them technicals, those are the vehicles with heavy machine guns and definitely mortars. And one of the SEALs died, apparently killed by mortar fire. 7 hours, Dan, is plenty of time to get support. Plenty of time for an airstrike. Now you get into some other legitimate questions that the administration should answer. Is the reason you didn't send support because you didn't want to violate Libyan sovereignty? That's the way I end my column. Maybe I should have started a column with that, except I had to review all the other aftermath to get up to that. That involves a heavy political decision. But you're also, look at the envelope, the big envelope. You're dealing with a country that does not have the security capacity to protect foreign diplomats and diplomatic establishments. It's on you to act and react. Why wasn't that political decision made earlier? If it was, and it was decided that you weren't going to violate Libyan sovereignty, why did you have personnel there? You see, it gets into some, these are all legitimate questions. Again, given the moment and the election, and I'm going to tell you, because of the way this has evolved, the slow response and unwillingness, and also that first narrative that the video did it, which is now in shreds, it's going to be a huge political problem should President Obama be reelected. It will not be ignored. The mainstream media is having to deal with it. Heck, I'm looking at the Washington Post. Admittedly, it's a conservative blogger at the Washington Post, but even David Ignatius this week, in a column that's very interesting for many reasons. He recognizes the significance of Benghazi, but compare what he wrote to me. He is more or less hedging it, and I will say that. He's at least addressed it, but why are you doing it now instead of in September, the middle of September? It was big news then. a legitimate article, legitimate questions. Many of these questions were, Dan, legitimately formulated, I would say, within, you can put a week on my column, but certainly within the first 2 weeks after the event, before October the 1st. It's finally moving into, quote-unquote, mainstream media consciousness. Well, it's been there at some minimal level, but this is a huge story. This is an absolutely huge story, and it's made worse. This is where I don't agree right now with the analogy to Watergate per se, but it's made worse by the unwillingness and reluctance to talk about it and to also address the origins of that video edit narrative. And it's made much worse by the appearance of early warnings to the State Department. That's the significance of this cable and some of the other things that have come out really since, I think, October 19th, October 20th is when some of the other evidence began coming out. So I'll treat the aftermath rather quickly, Dan. Because in some ways we've already touched on it. You have the initial narrative. You have the questions. Yes, you've got the exacerbated context of a very intensely fought and apparently close presidential election. You've had this is my own speculation. I don't have access to these slow burn deep polls, but you've seen an erosion in the trust of the Obama administration, reflected in the likability numbers. I think that's one of the ways pollsters measure confidence and general assessment of the presidency. Is it related to Benghazi? That's a logical explanation. I think the most logical, and more so than the economy. The economy's been muddling for the last couple of months. So it's the Benghazi. That's a reasonable explanation in terms of effects on the Obama campaign. Now, what does it do? Another question in the aftermath, though, do general government, general trust of the accuracy of the NRC of the White House? Again, open speculation. But if the deal is, if it's not answered, these legitimate questions are not answered prior to next Tuesday. And they come out, and some of the, certainly I don't think some of the worst rumors and speculation just aren't justified, but the legitimate ones, and I've covered several of them, and it turns out the answers are very embarrassing to the Obama administration. The president's going to have an even harder four-year period in his second term. And there's where there's some efficacy in the I think at this point in the quote unquote Watergate analysis, because the non-operative explanations that Richard Nixon offered harmed him a great deal. Harmed him with his maybe his own supporters. So that's even deeper aftermath. Dan, it's not finished. It's not anywhere near finished. And part of the and why is that? Reluctance of the administration to discuss it. And again, the drip of information, somewhat in spite of the national media in Washington. You're watching you're really watching journalism on the web mature, We've seen this happen with other issues, but that's what's one of the things that's been happening here on the with the Benghazi situation. It's because
right.
that's you're seeing the legitimate and reporting. You're seeing some really useful analysis. You're seeing it done cogently, and it's being done outside, quote unquote, the mainstream media stalwarts. Again, I know I was referring to the Washington Post blog. It's Jennifer Rubin's blog, and the other reporting has come not in a coherent and unified presentation on the CBS Evening News, NBC Evening News, ABC Evening News. Even though CBS and ABC have in places some of their correspondents have done contributed to this story, but you're seeing it come from places on the internet, and part of that is because of the internet. You don't have to be Washington centric to get the leaks. You don't have to be Washington centric to come in contact with people in the government security agencies who will express their concerns to you. It doesn't have to be the privacy of a conversation over lunch somewhere in the Capitol, and be the privacy of an email or a phone phone call and the like. There are other outlets. There's not just one filter. Now I'm telling you something that you definitely know, and have a strategy page since 1999. Where do we get some of our best tips? From our readers. And some of them are in really interesting places. And I don't mean in terms of a leak, but hey, I happen to be here, and this is what I saw. And Jim, by the way, I really love playing Panzer Blitz. I'm sort of being cheeky there, but that's the hell. Why Dunnigan gets some of the emails he does from the old wargaming crowd. Those are people who the wargamers are folks who maybe just as hobbyists, but they understand the significance of some of the events they see in some of the places that they are, and it's easy to do it because of the web. It's easy to get it out there because of the web, and you build it's the pressure of expression, also the pressure of ideas, and finally, Dan, there's also the pressure of the truth. And in the case of Benghazi, the truth is sordid, it's sad, and it is increasingly embarrassing for the administration. And it's the administration has
right.
that may be the basic reason, but the administration has been reluctant to address it. And they're waiting for the election to be over. Well, okay, there's a corrosive effect. But there's a corrosive effect of that. So we'll see.
Right.
And I haven't really gotten into how this Benghazi is questions. Have many listeners know my views on what of the Obama's strategic approaches. I've been a critic and a doubter, and I see those Benghazi as the fruits of some of these policy decisions. Overseas contingency operation. Now, again, it's the terrorist wars on us, to paraphrase Rudy Giuliani. It's real. It's not willed away. But those are, let me make that subject for a future discussion after the drip, drip, drip continues and becomes a torrent because the faucet isn't going to be shut off.
Yeah. The only thing I would warn our readers about is there is information coming out that people are connecting dots where there really are dots.
My understanding, for example, in the situation with AFRICOM and Carter Hamm is that Lieutenant General Rodriguez had been tabbed to replace him a long time ago, but My goodness, that's part of what I mean about rumors and speculation.
Right, and people don't understand there's
evidence for that, but my goodness, some of the discussion has been overwrought, but here's the deal. Why is it overwrought? There was no explanation for it. And it certainly looks, that's what I mean by corrosive too, Dan. I really don't want I don't like saying the word of the president doubted. I do not like that.
Well, it's not good for us as a nation to have that.
No, it's not. And the folks out there that said, oh yeah, right. Hey, listen, that's from the bottom of my heart. I mean that. I mean what I said about that. I do not like it. And that's part of why I devoted several sentences to talking about corrosive effects politically and institutionally is the way I worded it in that column. Don't like it. Bad. Long term bad.
Right.
Whatever the tactical benefits of delay for the Obama campaign, there are strategic corrosion politically and institutionally that will affect the United States and affect the second Obama term.
And we've seen that before with other administrations.
It riles. One of the things, if you check the internet, it just drives Obama supporters nuts to see the Watergate comparison up there. And that's part of the, and again, I told you I've got problems directly connecting it. It doesn't connect one for one, but there, take a look at the effects of Watergate on the second Nixon term, because the third-rate burglary, had extraordinary, did extraordinary strategic damage to the Nixon administration. And this, this is where the analogy should be a huge warning to the Obama administration.
Well, I think you can even drive it back to something like the Gulf of Tonkin incident, where that had a corrosive effect on the Johnson administration.
Ultimately, it did.
Yep.
But the Gulf of Tonkin has never been fully and adequately explained.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that doesn't happen with Benghazi. Let's hope that the facts all come out. Just from the facts in my mind, and I get very emotional about this, is about the two SEALs. The true story has to be told about their battle and their fight and what went on to pay respect to them.
Man, we've got some great people in the military, don't we, man? Strategy Page is a pro-military. And the thing is, take a look at look at the courage and honor and self-sacrifice of those two former SEALs. Essentially, they put themselves back on active duty, Dan. They did.
Yeah.
And they died.
Well, yeah, and I've been asked by reporters before, are we pro-war? I have to explain, we're not pro-war. We don't want conflict. What we are is pro-military.
Yeah, I buy that. Definitely pro-soldier. There's no question about that.
Right.
And not saying pro-soldier is not a knock at Marines and sailors or airmen, folks. I'm using that in a generic sense. So. All right, Dan, next time we'll have Jim back, and he'll have power back.
Yeah.
All right.
See you later. Bye.